As we continue our study in the book of Zechariah, we're now in the 14th chapter, the last chapter of the book. And beginning in verse 6, this chapter has to do with prophecies about the events and conditions of the Christian church. Verse 6 says, "It shall come to pass in that day that the light shall not be clear, nor the dark." I think this is simply showing that we won't know everything. We're going to have a lot of light, but it won't be all the light. And we're going to have enough light so we'll not be in the dark. But yet, there'll be a lot of light that we won't have. That is a lot of knowledge, understanding we won't have about the Bible. No one person is going to know it all. And that's going to be the condition throughout the church. Nobody can study enough that he has outstudied what the Bible has to teach. And verse 7 said, "It shall be known one day which shall be known to the Lord, not day, not night, but it shall come to pass that in the evening time it shall be light." In the church, we will be able to see enough to know how to serve God, yet we're always learning more truth, and there's always more truth there to be learned. And verse 8 says, "And it shall come be in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, half of them toward the hinder sea, in summer and in winter shall it be." So Jerusalem was the place where the living water would flow out to the world, and yet this is a type of the church. The living waters will come out to the world from the church. And that's the only way that mankind can be compatible with God is to go through the church. Verse 9 says, "And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall there be one Lord, and his name one." So the Lord shall be king over all the earth. This is the age of the New Testament church. The church built by the Messiah, built by Jesus Christ, this church exists as a part of the kingdom of heaven. And a kingdom must have four things to qualify as a kingdom. It must have a law, a territory, a people, and a king. Well, the law is the New Testament, which replaced the law of Moses. That's the law of the church, the law of the kingdom of heaven. The territory is the whole world, all the earth. This kingdom of heaven is designed to exist under any form of earthly government. It is not an earthly power, nor does it overthrow an earthly power. The third thing, the people, they are the members of the church. Those who have been such as should be saved and added to the church daily, since Acts 2:38, those are the ones who are the people, the populace of this kingdom. And the king is Jesus Christ, who is reigning in this kingdom now. He will continue this reign until the end of time. At his second coming, there will be the resurrection of the dead and the judgment. At that time, Christ will have delivered the kingdom up to God the Father, but he is the king now, and he is king over all the earth. He must reign until the last enemy is destroyed. Death will be destroyed at his second coming, when all of the dead shall be resurrected. Some of the scriptures which teach this include John 5:28-29. There he says, "Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming, in the which all that are in the grave shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation." Matthew 2:1-2. "Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born king of the Jews?" 1 Corinthians 15:24-26. "Then cometh the end, when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power, for he must reign till he hath put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death." So in that day shall there be one Lord, his name one, our passage in Zechariah says. During the age of the New Testament church, there will be only one Lord. Only one religion will be recognized by God. The Lord will be recognized by the same name among all the faithful. Satan wants to divide the church into different factions, different beliefs, and different practices. But the true church will be one in doctrine and practice worldwide. Ephesians 4:3-6, "Endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace, there is one body and one Spirit, even as you are called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all, and through all, and in you all. Now verses 10 and 11 of our chapter in Zechariah 14 say, all the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem, and it shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place from Benjamin's gate unto the place of the first gate, unto the corner gate, and from the tower of Hananiel unto the king's wine press. And men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. The land of Judea and Jerusalem, its mother city, shall be repaired and given special protection by heaven. Actually, Judah and Jerusalem are shown here as symbols of the Church of Christ. The church should be like a fruitful country, abounding in all the rich products of the soil. The whole land of Judea, naturally uneven and hilly, shall be like a smooth, level valley, as a much wider Jordan Valley would be. It will reach from Gibeah, its furthest border to the north, to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem. The gospel of Christ, wherever it is taught, levels the ground, so that the Lord alone may be exalted. Just as the holy land shall be leveled, so the holy city shall be peopled. Jerusalem will be raised up out of its low position. It shall be raised up out of its ruins. The whole city shall be inhabited. The outer limits of the city are here mentioned as having been built upon, from the Benjamin Gate northeast to the Corner Gate northwest, from the Tower of Hananel in the south to the royal wine presses in the north. Those who dwell in it shall be secure. All who remain within the city shall be safe and secure. There shall be no more curse. Verse 12 of Zechariah 14, and this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. The enemies of the church who fought or do fight against the New Jerusalem will be defeated by God. Those who fight against the church will be fighting against God. They shall waste away with painful and debilitating diseases. Verse 13, and it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them, and they shall lay hold every one on the hand of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. So the enemies of the church will have great panic. They will actually fight against each other. The Lord will cause them to be opposed to each other. Verse 14, and Judah also shall fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the heathen round about shall be gathered together, gold and silver and apparel in great abundance. When attacked by the enemy, one part of the church will help another part of the church. The wealth of the sinner may be laid up for the just, as the wealth of the Egyptians enriched the Israel of God when they left Egypt. And it is true that the lives of Christians are made more comfortable and productive by the inventions of the sinners. And there are probably many other ramifications of this prophecy which we are not able to explain. The work of the church is aided by modern technology, printing presses, recording equipment, automobiles, so that today we can travel great distances to worship with other brethren. We can print copies of the Bible in abundance. We can record and distribute Bible teaching by tape, CD, DVD, and by radio. Verse 15, and so shall be the plague of the horse, of the mule, of the camel, and of the ass, and of all the beasts that shall be in these tents, as this plague. And what he seems to say here is that the plague will extend to their animals. The beasts of burden, of work and war, will be affected. This would include the modern tools and equipment that might be used against the church. God is ever watchful over his people and is more advanced in technology than any of the enemies of Jerusalem are. Verse 16, and it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem. This seems to be the remnant of all the nations who had opposed Christ, but had been converted, and were now following Christ. Their turn to Christ and the church is symbolically shown as if they had returned to the Jewish temple and kept one of the Jewish feasts. The Jews had three grand original festivals, which represented different periods in their history. The feast of the Passover was in remembrance of their departure from Egypt. The feast of Pentecost was in remembrance of the giving of the law on Mount Sinai. And the feast of Tabernacles was in remembrance of their wandering 40 years in the wilderness. This last feast is a very proper symbol representing restoration of the Jews to the land of Canaan, the gospel church, after their long wandering in the wilderness of sin. It could also represent the Gentiles who came out of the same wilderness of sin into the promised land of Canaan, which is, as we said, the gospel church, the church established by our Savior. The same figure applies to us today. We must go to Christ, our temple, with all of our offerings, for in Him only are our spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God. 1 Peter 2 and 5, ye also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. Every day in a Christian's life is a day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Verse 17, and it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. So those who do not come to the true church to worship will lack the blessings of salvation for their failing to worship the King, the Lord of hosts. This is failure to worship Jesus Christ and God the Father. Upon them shall be no rain, he says. It is obvious that we are told here that they would be denied the blessings of God which give life, here described as rain. All the spiritual blessings will be withheld. This includes forgiveness of sins, salvation, and everlasting life in heaven. Next, let's read verses 18 and 19. And if the family of Egypt go not up, and come not, that have no rain, there shall be plague, wherewith the Lord shall smite the heathen, that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt, and the punishment of all nations that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. There are some who have no desire for spiritual blessings. They do not believe in God, nor do they have a hope of resurrection from the dead or of getting to heaven. Cutting off spiritual blessings seems to be no threat to them, just like threatening to cut off rain from those who live in Egypt. In Egypt, they do not lack for rain. They simply use the water of the Nile. Well, in the case of those who care not if the rain is cut off, or those who care not if the spiritual blessings are cut off, as those who live in Egypt, then they shall receive the plague with which the Lord stripes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So there is some punishment. There is a plague for all who do not serve the Lord. It is not true that those who can live without rain can therefore live without God. Those who desire no spiritual blessings and seem to get by with very few physical blessings must know that omissions and neglect are sins. Those are guilty who do not go up to worship at the times appointed as they have opportunity. Regardless of what your feeling about it is, you are going to be guilty if you don't worship God. Verses 20 and 21, in that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses holiness unto the Lord, and the pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts, and all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seethe therein, and in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. It seems that in the gospel age, holiness would be a part of everyone's life. Holy to the Lord had only been written on the high priest's forehead, but now it shall not be so limited. All Christians shall be living temples and spiritual priests dedicated to the honor of God and employed in His service. There shall be better access to the Spirit of holiness and sanctification after Christ's ascension than before. Everything they do will be in harmony with holiness. On the bells of the horses shall be engraved, "Holiness to the Lord." Items of common use will be dedicated to the Lord. The common drinking cups of everyday use shall be like the sacred bowls used in front of the altar. The vessels used for their own tables shall be used to the glory of God and shall be used only in a godly way. Yes, every part in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness to the Lord of hosts. The common person will actually be a priest to God if he's a servant of God. Their food shall be for the nourishment of their bodies, and their bodies shall be for the service of God. All duties of life shall be associated with holiness to the Lord and not be connected with any sin. In gospel times, true worshipers shall worship God in spirit and truth, according to John 4:23. One place shall be as acceptable to God as another. There shall be no unholiness in the life of a Christian. Every action of the Christian will be an act that is holiness to God. On that day, there will no longer be a Canaanite in the house of the Lord Almighty. All in the house of God will only be there because they are holy children of God. The word Canaanite is used as a figure for the morally and spiritually unclean persons who will be excluded from being a part of the church and its worship. They will not be allowed to be a temple of God, nor to serve as a priest at the altar of God. Before Israel conquered the Promised Land, the vile Canaanites inhabited the land. Thus, the name Canaanite became proverbial in Israel for a morally degenerate and ceremonial unclean person. So the book closes with this statement, "In that day there shall no longer be a Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts." We have a few minutes left on the tape, so I'd like to say just a few words about the lessons we can learn about the earthquake that he mentions in verse 5 of this 14th chapter. Job in Job 12:8 says, "Speak to the earth and it shall teach thee." And so one of the lessons of the earthquake is that it will impress us with the greatness of God. There are forces, great and terrible, but back of all and controlled by all is God. So the prophets taught, and so we believe. Another thing the earthquake does is to humble us under a sense of our utter helplessness. Many things are possible to man. Man can tame the wild beast. He can subdue the earth in many ways. He can make fire and air and water his servants. But there are times when he feels his impotence, he feels his helplessness. When the earthquake comes, man can only say it's the will of God. Isaiah speaks of an earthquake in Isaiah 2, beginning with the 19th verse. "And they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of the Lord and for the glory of his majesty when he arises to shake terribly the earth. In that day a man shall cast his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made each one for himself to worship, to the moles and to the bats, to go into the clefts of the rocks and into the tops of the ragged rocks for fear of the Lord, for the glory of his majesty when he arises to shake terribly the earth. Cease ye from man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of?" And that last verse, "cease ye from man," would simply mean to do not hold on to man, do not depend upon man. A man is only here as long as he has breath in his nostrils. When he stops breathing, he no longer exists on this earth. And wherein is he to be accounted of? He's really of no value when it comes to your salvation. Another thing an earthquake does is to convince us of the instability of all earthly things. The earth seems of all things to be the most stable. But there comes a crisis, and our old faith is gone forever. A bad earthquake can immediately destroy things that we've been associated with all of our life. The earth, the very emblem of solidity, has moved beneath our feet. All of the security we have built in a lifetime here on this earth can be destroyed in 1 second of time by this great movement of the earth. Another thing an earthquake does is to warn us of the judgments that are coming upon the earth. geologists tell us of internal fires and the probability of some great catastrophe sooner or later. Coming events cast their shadows before they come, actually, and earthquakes are prophecies, confirmed by the Scripture, in 2 Peter 3, verses 10 through 12. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat, the earth also, and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens, being on fire, shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Then Peter says, Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. So we're looking for another time, another heaven, another earth to replace this one, the where righteousness will be. We do not have righteousness in this earth today. It's full of sin and wickedness and evil of all kind, but we're looking for that new one that'll have righteousness. But the new one will come only after the old one has been destroyed. So as we think of destructions of the earth, as we think of things like earthquakes that devastate the mountainside and the habitations that are built there, let's remember that there is going to come a time when this earth will be destroyed. It will have to be destroyed. Then we look for the new heavens and the new earth to take its place. The new heavens and new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. That's what we look for. That's what we long for. That's what Christianity is striving for. So with that, we close our study of the book of Zechariah. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.